Thanks very much for the invitation. And after this nice tension in the beginning, I can start talking about, well, the Hitching map, the Hitching integrable system, which we recently, with Nigel Hitchin, actually joint work with him, we started to look at it on Lagrangian slices. And then what we found was this notion of multiplicity algebras, which were useful for the understanding. And very recently, when studying these multiplicity algebras, which we used actually to try to understand the Hitching map in some sense explicitly on this Lagrangian, I realized that it's not just the multiplicity algebra, but in fact, the whole Hitching map can be in some cases modeled as the spectrum of equivariant cohomology, which I don't yet have a good explanation of what this means and why it's there. So I am still in the exploratory phase of this circle of ideas, but you will see where I am. So first, let me discuss a few things about these multiplicity algebras. We look at them between affine varieties, U and V. It will be slightly more general than the examples that we looked at with Nigel. So we will look at two affine varieties with a C star action on each with a single fixed point of the C star action. And we will assume that all the weights are positive. So these kind of actions on affine varieties have been studied by many people. In my circle, or in our circle of ideas, this goes by the name of semi-projective variety, affine semi-projective variety. Then this notion, which is came up in our studies with Nigel on the Hitching map on Lagrangian, we introduced the notion of very stable Higgs bundles and all that story. And now I'm going to give you a more abstract definition, which is valid between affine varieties with such semi-projective C star action. So if you have a C star equivariant map, then obviously the origin in U will have to go to the origin in V. We will call a map, a C star equivariant, very stable if it's the only one which goes to the origin. That is to say that the preimage of the origin, which in this language of semi-projective varieties, we call it the core of the semi-projective variety, is the preimage is just the core itself. It's inside the core, but also therefore is the core itself. So in some sense, this definition also says that the map is proper at the origin. And it turns out that for this extra stuff, it will imply that the map is proper globally. And in fact, this property is equivalent. But you will see that the notion of very stability really is just this very weak notion that you want to avoid the zero fibers, other fibers of the zero fiber. That's what we will call very stable. So basically, in most of the cases, you will have the two affine varieties the same dimension. And so from now on, we will assume that. And also, technical reasons. We assume V is smooth, but for U, we assume it's Cohen-Macaulay. Some technical condition is used in particular in the proof of the following equivalence. You can show that in this equidimensional case, this property of being proper will imply that the map is finite, and then in turn, by miracle flatness, where all these assumptions will be used, it's flat too. So it's a finite flat morphism, which has this beautiful geometrical picture, is that if you push forward the structure sheet from U now, then you will get a locally free C star equivariant vector bundle, which is in fact a sheaf of algebras. So this is kind of a beautiful geometrical picture. You have a vector bundle on the base, C star equivariant, plus you have all this extra stuff coming from the algebra structure of functions on U. So that's what we call a very stable map between two FI semi-projective varieties of the same dimension. Let's also spell this out in terms of the algebras, because in one set of examples, in fact, that will be more familiar when we look at the ring of functions, not their spectrum, the the varieties or schemes. So we will take the ring of functions on V, call it A, and on U, call it B. And the cis direction on them with all these positive weights will give us a grading with non-negative graded pieces. The assumption that we only have zero, the origin, the only fixed point of the cis direction, will say that the zeroth degree part is just a copy of the field itself. And we will call the rest A plus, which is nothing but the maximal ideal of the origin. So this will be an important ideal when we will work on, when we will think about these geometries. So you can reformulate this definition of being very stable on the level of the spectra, just on the level of ring of functions. You will have a graded finite flat morphism between these graded rings, which is just says that B is a finite locally free algebra over A. Again, this is nothing, it's just a reformulation in terms of algebra. So now comes this crucial notion of a multiplicity algebra. With geometrical terms, it's pretty nice and simple to understand. It's just this ring of functions on the scheme theoretical preimage of the origin, which you remember by your assumption of very stability, it's just a zero dimensional scheme. So what we will get is a nice finite dimensional algebra, which you can actually define easily by in terms of the ring of functions. So you take all the functions on the source and divide by all functions which come from the base, which vanish at the origin. And those are the ideal we will consider. Another way to say this, that this is some sort of base change to this maximal ideal at the origin in the base. And this algebra, this finite dimensional algebra, is this crucial, or it was the ore interest with Nigel in the case of the Hitchin system recently. It turns out that this condition of being preimage one dimension, just the origin itself, is will be equivalent to say that this algebra is finite dimensional, that is, the scheme is zero dimensional. So that's what F very stability will be equivalent to. And in this case, why is it called the multiplicity algebra? It was, you will see in a moment, in original work of Arnold's school on singularities, they use this algebra to measure the multiplicity of F, they say at the origin, but I think like to think about this globally. So the multiplicity of F is going to be the dimension of this algebra. So let me then show you this, where this comes from, where I first, we actually rediscovered it in terms of the Hitchin system, but then I found that in the case of map C star equivariant polynomials of between Cn to Cn, so you have on Cn and Cn two possibly different C star action, but all with strictly positive weights. And you have a C star equivariant map, which is called quasi-homogeneous in this Arnold school language, which is a C star equivariant. They call it non-degenerate, or very stability notion for them, it's called non-degenerate. And they call this what we call multiplicity algebra, they call it the local algebra of such a function at the origin. Okay, oops, didn't know why did I get this, right. And but because local algebra in commutative algebra and many other places is an overloaded term, I renamed this multiplicity algebra, but it really is the same notion as what Arnold, then school, and all the singularity studies call local algebra. And there, it has a beautiful property. in the situation at hand, when we have this sister grading with positive weights, they argue, they prove it beautifully, that the algebra is not just a finite dimensional algebra, but it's actually a graded Poincaré duality algebra, which algebraically comes from the fact that this will be a complete intersection ring, a graded complete intersection ring. But they actually go beautiful arguments, and they show that you have a Poincaré duality, you have a grading, you have an integration on this algebra. It's all really beautiful. And this was crucial for us because we saw that our algebras also seem to satisfy Poincaré duality. And that was already, that was the first sign that this could be interesting to look at. So instead of talking about the original examples which we found, this is, I think, what many people like to do. I like to do it. I always talk about the new things first. So what I recently discovered, or I mean realized, because this is not my observation really, that equivariant cohomology in the case of a formal, equivariantly formal situation gives examples of these multiplicity algebras. I give examples of these very stable maps and then in turn multiplicity algebra. So let me then remind you of these constructions in equivariant cohomology, why it will be puzzling, because the notion will be basically homotopy theoretical. We will construct the equivariant cohomology ring over the complex numbers, and just we will take specs, and then we will then think about those things geometrically. So I first recall this construction of equivariant cohomology. This language here is algebraic geometry. I like to call things complex reductive groups, but you might be more familiar with the compact Lie group, then it's enough for you to think about that. And in order to define equivariant cohomology, we use the existence of a universal principal G bundle, this EG, which is a homotopic, a contractible space, homotopically the point, with an action, free action of G, which exists by theory, and then the quotient, the base of this principal G bundle is called the classifying space BG. So these things are again defined up to homotopy. And for example, what will be crucial is that just the cohomology of the base, the classifying space, will play a very important role. So we spell that out in the case of a complex reductive group. You can compute, this will be your coefficient ring, the cohomology ring of the classifying space of the compact group or complex reductive group G, can be computed from the classifying space of the maximal torus. You take the cohomology of the classifying space of the torus, and you take the veil action, the bigroup action on it, and take veil invariance. And then there is a very nice, again, this is how we will get to geometry. If we will think of this abstract complex algebra, you can identify it with the ring of functions on the Cartan subalgebra. Now in the complex, in our complex Lie algebra, you take the Lie algebra of T, and then on it the Weyl group action, and you take invariant functions. And because what I mentioned is that we will be doing geometry, we will take the spectrum of this, and the spectrum of this then by definition of the affine GIT quotient will just be this quotient space of the maximal, the Cartan subalgebra by the Weyl group. Okay, so I'm just here explaining this. Again, this will be crucial for us geometrically. This base will be an affine space always, and not accidentally, maybe it will be actually similar to the base of the Hitchin vibration. That will somehow play the role of the base of the Hitchin vibration in some of our examples. But this is an affine space. Okay, so now we go for an action of this complex reductive group on, say, an algebraic variety. But it could be homotopical theoretical, so it could be basically any topological space. One point I actually have to emphasize is the grading, right? Because we have a grading on cohomology, the usual grading, and that on the scheme will give us this cis direction with positive weights. In this case, it will give us weight two because the cohomology of the classifying space is concentrated in even degrees. Later, we will just divide by these two. Okay, so then we use the Borel construction for this more general setup to construct this homotopy quotient xg using the quotient of x times eg by the diagonalization of g, which will naturally fiber over the classifying space with fibers which are all homotopic, or actually they are isomorphic with the X, the original space X itself. So you have an X bundle over BG, and the equivariant cohomology ring is just simply going to be the usual cohomology complex. For us, it's always going to be complex because we will want to take stack of it, complex coefficient cohomology ring of this homotopy quotient. And what's important, what's makes this equivalent cohomology theory slightly more structured than the usual cohomology ring, that one is also, of course, algebra over the cohomology of a point, but that is just the field itself. So there's not much more structure here. On the other hand, we always have this structure map. And what we will get is always going to be a module over this H star G, this basic coefficient algebra. So, okay. Now very quickly remind you, so what we have is a graded commutative A star G algebra. At this point, we still might have odd cohomologies, which are not going to make this commutative, but soon actually we will discard that and we will get very nice commutative algebras. And so we will be in the situation where we can do a geometry. So, but this will actually be automatically happen once we look at this notion of equivariant formality, which says the some spectral sequence definition is that the Lorentz spectral sequence for cohomology of this fibration should degenerate, collapse. And then there are various other equivalent forms. It says that the module A star GX and A star G module should be a free module, or equivalently, not just any free module, as a module, it should be equivalent with this module, with the usual cohomology representing somehow a natural basis inside this as H star G module. And finally, you can just say, the simplest thing to say is that if you take over the origin base change to the origin, this A star G module, then you will just get the usual cohomology ring of the variety. So these are all equivalent the notions, and they are all amount to say that it is equivariantly formal. Okay, so very quickly, we will only want to work with equivariant formality, because in a moment I will argue that this is where natural source of very stable morphisms between semi-projective affine varieties. But let's see then what assumptions one needs to put on the spaces so that we get equivariant formality. So the first one is we like, because it goes back to symplectic geometry, to Frances Curwen's PhD, where she proves that in the compact world, if you have a compact Lie group Hamiltonian action, then the cohomology is equivariantly formal. That's one situation. But a better one in some sense, especially for our purposes, is to just assume that the odd cohomology with complex coefficients of X vanishes. This actually excludes the bad guys, right? If G, for example, acts on itself from the left, say, freely, then the G equivalent cohomology will just be the cohomology of a point. It cannot be equivariantly formal. But the point is that G, obviously, it is going to have a cohomology ring, which is generated at odd degrees. So this guy is very far away from having odd cohomology, trivial. And so from now on, we will assume this, that all of cohomology of all our spaces, and therefore this one, and then you can show that then that will imply equivalent formality, and therefore all cohomology rings. We already know this one, the coefficient, we always have even degrees because of this odd degree thing about the group itself. And therefore we have now nice commutative algebras to consider. So now everything is commutative, and from now on, we will just take this degree gradient and divide it by two. So now we can look at our spectrum of this equivalent cohomology, and now it's going to acquire a cis direction coming from the grading, and this will have a single zero, and this is going to be, in fact, a semi-projective variety, plus the structure map, which will on spectra will be a map down to the spectrum of the coefficient ring, this one, will be very stable. Then that's equivalent with this notion of equivariant formality. So when I realized this, it was pretty surprising to me, because this again comes from homotopy theory, very naturally in there, you have a large class of examples of very stable morphisms. They come from the spectrum of equivariant cohomology of a smooth projective variety whose odd cohomology vanishes. And this is going to be over the smooth vector space of this Chevalier space of T mod W. And beautifully, over zero, the preimage over zero is just going to give us the cohomology ring of X itself. And by now we, okay, in the case when this was a vector space, we could use their theory, the singularity people theory, to say that that's a Poincaré duality algebra. But in fact, we have just the usual cohomology ring of X as the multiplicity algebra of such an S. Let me show you an example, which will be exactly the example which will show up in the X moduli space case. You can actually do it for any partial flag variety. So quickly, I set that up. So you have your reductive group, a parabolic subgroup, Borel subgroup, and the maximal torus. We will take this very particular one. Then in GLN, we will take this block matrix of K times K matrix and N minus K times K matrix and N minus K, etc. This block matrix, where you have zero in the bottom left corner and anything and then and anything everywhere else to get an invertible matrix. So that's a parabolic, particular parabolic subgroup. And then we have the partial flag variety of quotients of G mod P, which is a projective variety with, in fact, only odd, only even cohomology. On this, we have the action of G. And for example, and that's going to be our main example, in this particular example of a partial flag variety, we will get the Grassmannian of K planes, complex K planes in CN. And surprisingly, algebraically, somehow you can easily compute the equivariant cohomology of the partial flag variety just by noting these things, the simple properties of equivariant cohomology that P acts freely. So I can just pull up P here and now divide the G first, and then you will see that you will get H star P, which is the same as H star L, where L is the Levy factor of the parabolic, where you divide by the unipotent radical, which is homotopically trivial. That's why they have the same cohomology for the classifying space. And that is the cohomology we are talking about, is just the mild group invariant part of the same ambient ring of functions on the same ambient Cartan subalgebra. But now this is the subgroup of the big Y group, and this is the Y group of the Levy factor. In the case of at hand for GLN and PK, the case Levy factor is just that this block, these two blocks are allowed. So you have GLK times GLN minus K, and the Y group is just going to be SK times S minus K. And then we can then think about, again, okay, we have odd cohomology zero. So then we notice that going to the spectra on these rings, we will get equivalent formality. And so what are these maps in this case? We take the spectrum of equivalent cohomology of the partial flag variety, and then we computed both of them. So this is just the usual Cartan Chevalier thing for the group G, and this is the Chevalier construction for the Levy vector L. And so it's actually both of them are nice vector spaces of the same dimension. You have actually pretty simple map between them, but this map is just the spectrum of the equivalent cohomology of the partial flag variety. And in the case of the Grassmannian, this again is just a very nice map between two vector spaces. And this actually, this is the map we had been looking at with Nigel, and I don't know, since February or something. But only just like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I noticed that in fact this map is nothing but the equivariant, the spectrum of the equivariant cohomology of the Grassmannian. And of course, we get back what was our original observation. You will get back that the multiplicity algebra of this map is naturally the cohomology ring, the usual cohomology ring of the partial flag variety, which now surprisingly more complete. It's kind of non-trivial thing. This ring, even though everything here is kind of simple, but thinking about this cohomology ring is not at all trivial. If you had even tried Grassmannian, it's not entirely trivial to work in that ring. Okay, so that was the equivariant cohomology, which I recently noticed gives an awful lot of examples of this very stable maps between affine semi-projective varieties. But let me show you the original appearance of such very stable maps, or even the term very stable comes from looking at Bielenitsky-Birola theory on the moduli space of Higgs bundle. So this will be very quick, just a reminder of the space of the moduli space of semi-stable rank N and degree D Higgs bundles on the curve C with structure group GLN. Such a Higgs bundle, as I'm sure everyone knows, is just a pair of objects, rank N vector bundle, and the Higgs field, which is a section of the endomorphism bundle with values in the canonical bundle. So locally, you just think of a matrix with values in one forms. Okay, so I just tell you that, and you probably know that this space is hyperkähler, in particular, this complex structure. It is a nice algebraic symplectic structure. And not just that, we have this is actually completely integrable by this beautiful Hitchin map, which is very simply just taking the characteristic polynomial of the Higgs field, which was a matrix locally with one forms as entries. So then if you take the coefficients of the characteristic polynomial, then you will have these sections of the powers of the canonical bundle. And that vector space is going to be the base of the Hitchin system. It's going to be a proper map morphism. And amazingly, it actually is the, if you can somehow show that they are both semi-projective, then you would be in the same language and properness is equivalent to very stability. But somehow everything comes from this properness. So for me, very semi-projectivity of the Higgs moduli space comes from this, although now I think I have other proofs as well. Okay, and so it has a completely integrable Hamiltonian system, meaning that the dimension of this is half of the dimension of that, and the coordinate functions here are Poisson commuting. So it's really beautiful, very natural, very simple, but really non-trivial map. So today we are going to look at this from the perspective of one more structure on this moduli space, a natural cis direction. We will allow to multiply the Higgs field by a non-zero scalar. You will get another Higgs bundle, and that will induce a natural cis direction on the space. And you can, in fact, look at the Hitchin map and then give a cis direction on the base by having weight I action on this k to the I. And in fact, I didn't point it out, but when we go inside just the usual equivariant cohomology picture, the grading on T mod W, S is going to have various different weights. And this is very similar and very analogous to that. And this is not an accident. It's really the similarities are striking. And there will be, as I say, more direct relations of understanding the Hitchin base, how it relates to the equivariant cohomology of a point. The sister action in particular, again, has the same kind of different weights. And if you then understand that the map is semi-projective, you know the map is the map is proper and C-star equivariant, and you know that the image is semi-projective, and you know the map is proper. That will imply M is semi-projective. Okay, quickly I tell you what do I mean by that. It just means that you have a linear action of C-star on M. It just means that you can have an embedding of M into some big projective space where you have a linear action and that reduces to R action. And this is pretty automatic for us because you just take any ample line bundle on M and then you can show that C star can action can be lifted there, and that linearization will give us such a linear embedding. Then the second property, which again can be proved from considering the properness of the Hitchin map, is that the fixed point set is proper. In fact, it is going to sit in over the fixed point set on the base, over zero. It will be in the nilpotent cone. You have this proper subset there. And finally, this attractive property, any C star orbit of any element at one end and lambda goes to zero will have a limit point. And that is crucial for our considerations, because that way we can in fact partition our space into this Bjarnitzky-Birulla strata or partition into these upward flows. So to each E in the Higgs moduli space, fixed point of the Higgs moduli space, I can take all the Higgs bundles, stable, semi-stable Higgs bundles, which will have a limit point when lambda goes to zero or fixed E. So for each E, I just collect the corresponding F, so that will be some subset. And because of semi-projectivity, this will give a partition. So now, what's beautiful in this Bjarnitzky-Birulla theory is that the strata, these parts are particularly nice, at least in the smooth case. So for technical reasons, we allow semi-stability strictly, and then we will have sometimes smooth in singular points in the moduli space. But if you take a smooth point, smooth fixed point of the C-star direction, for that, you have Bjarnitzky-Birulla theory, which will tell us that the subset of points which flow into down to or point E is actually a locally closed subvariety, which is a cell isomorphic with a vector space. In fact, we know which vector space, the tangent space at the point E taken as with the C star action, and we pick out the positive weights from the C star action. And this subspace, which is a locally closed subvariety, in fact, can be proved to be isomorphic as a C star variety with such a vector space. But this isomorphism, and this is crucial, is not canonical. So we don't yet have a canonical one. Although what I'm going to talk about hints that maybe we will have some canonical ways to coordinatize these upward flows. And amazingly and importantly for us, they are Lagrangian in our situation, because the C-star action is the holomorphic symplectic form has homogeneity one with respect to the C-star action. Okay, and so here was our original reason to look at such very stable maps, because one can now restrict to this vector space, Lagrangian vector space, and have a C-star equivariant map down to the Hitchin base. And it turned, and our definition was that let's call the Higgs bundle or the upward flow or this map very stable, if it's very stable in the sense I had made. Basically what it says is that the preimage of zero here can be just the zero. And what it means is that the only nilpotent Higgs bundle on the upward flow can be E itself. There is no non-trivial nilpotent Higgs bundle. And this is one of the origin of the term very stable. In the case when the Higgs field is zero, this was a notion coined by Drinfeld and Lomon in their geometric approach to the Lagrange program. And they had this notion of very stable bundle. In the case of a normal bundle, a usual bundle, it is called very stable if there is no Higgs field on that vector bundle, which makes it nilpotent. And that's the same notion here, but we just look at it not just on the case when the underlying Higgs field is zero, but over any Higgs bundle, which is fixed by the C star action. And you will get this notion of very stability. So the nice thing with Nigel in the paper on the archive, we managed to classify some parts of these very stable Higgs bundles. It's still very difficult, the original setup for what Ginfeld and Lomon was doing it, which has a direct connection to geometric Legrands. It's still, there are questions which we don't understand, but it turns out that somehow at the other end of this nilpotent cone, I like to call this the tip of the nilpotent cone, on the top of it, we have a complete understanding. Anyway, I'm not going to tell
Thomas, can I interrupt you? So I just want to understand the definition. So you're defining notion of very stable Higgs bundle, and in particular, it's part of the definition that it's fixed by C star, right?
Right.
So in particular, in itself, it is nilpotent.
Right.
Okay.
It's the only nilpotent Higgs bundle on its upward flow. It's the same thing as in the original Lomon and Ginfeld definition, because there you take your vector
bundle. No, they understand, but I just want to make sure I understand the definition. So some semi-stable nilpotent Higgs bundles are called very stable. Yeah.
Right, the ones which don't admit in their upward flow other nilpotent Higgs bundles. That's the original definition. And then all this theory I told you, it makes it equivalent to say that this map is very stable, which then, according to those things, makes it to say that this is a proper map. And that will actually be equivalent to say that the upward flow is closed. So that's a little theorem of ours, that the upward flow is closed precisely when it is very stable. So that's another way to think about it. But I like to think of in terms of these maps, restricted maps being very stable, just because that's where these other examples will show up.
And sorry, just to confirm, Tamás, am I picturing right that this means that this sort of flow inset is as small as it could possibly be?
Which set?
The W plus E.
Yeah.
That this is sort of the smallest dimension it could have?
And this is always a Lagrangian. It's always the same dimension. It's always,
so it's always a Lagrangian. Okay.
But it's not going to be, typically, it's not going to be closed. And this closure is a mess. It's something very complicated and super interesting, actually, mm-hmm. The closure. But these are the easiest ones in that sense. You will see, or I will not go into there, but they are somehow in the highest points in some partial ordering. They are the simplest one. They are related to minuscule weights, for example. That sort of thing you should have in mind. Okay. But you will see that already here, there is a lot of structure. The real excitement, real interest, I think, will be for other upward flows, but those are much harder. And for now, in this talk, I'm concentrating on the very stable case. So let me show you, basically, I will show you two examples or two sets of examples. One is a famous example due to Nigel, the so-called Hitchin section. So the Hitchin section is going to be a section of the Hitchin map, and it turns out to be nothing but an upward flow from a particular Higgs bundle, which we call E0, the canonical uniformizing Higgs bundle. This is very simple. It's just the underlying bundle is something simple. It's just the direct sum of line bundles. So in this set, it's always the underlying vector bundle will be a direct sum of line bundles. And the Higgs field is going to be just connecting this O with this O, K inverse with the unshown K inverse here, etc. It's going to be this lower triangular map, and these ones correspond to isomorphisms, to sections of line bundles with no zeros. So that's somehow a canonical uniformizing Higgs bundle. And the upward flow from there turns out to be super nice. And that's what's called the Hitchin section. So the upward flow, first of all, for everyone on the upward flow will have the same underlying bundle, which is this is the only case, I think, when this happens. So you still have the same E0, but the Higgs field is modified by changing it to what is called the companion matrix of a fixed element in the Hitchin base. You take those coefficients of your characteristic polynomial and plug it into the last column in this setup. And then it is constructed exactly so that its characteristic polynomial, its Hitchin map, is precisely A. So for every element A, this actually is, as it stands, is a section of the Hitchin map, but it turns out to be nothing but the upward flow from the canonical uniformizing Higgs bundle. So this is what I consider the very top of the Hitchin system, the nilpotent cone. It's the tip of the nilpotent cone, this canonical uniformizing Higgs bundle, and everything will flow in down from here. So here, of course, because this is the Hitchin section, the Hitchin map restricted to it is just an isomorphism. So it's obviously a very stable thing there. And every closure point has to be higher up in the nilpotent cone. So there is nothing above it. So indeed, it is a very stable Higgs bundle. So let me now show you one more class, which you can actually get from this one. And basically, that's one of the messages in our paper with Nigel, that a large class of very stable Higgs bundles you can obtain from this one, this single one, by Heckert transformations. I'm then just telling you another set. So we will fix a point on our curve, and we will modify we will keep the Higgs bundle almost, the underlying bundle, except we will introduce some twists. In the case one on, we will twist by the sheaf OC. And what it does actually, what it allows us is to slightly modify the Higgs field. We will allow a single zero of the case connecting the Hitchin map, which used to be one. Now we allow a single zero there at C. Anyway, that actually is a uniquely well-defined fixed point of the C star action. We call it EK. And then it is part of our theorem. We do classify in the paper all very stable Higgs bundles of this type, of type 111. And these are the first non-trivial examples in that classification. So they are very stable. And therefore, or equivalently, that this map, the restriction map, is a very stable morphism. And this is how all this stuff started, that after the paper, so it's no longer in, it's not yet in, written up, this multiplicity algebra. We started to think about the multiplicity algebra of this map, etc. And today I will tell you that, in fact, this map can be completely modeled by the equivariant cohomology of the Grassmannian K-planes in CN. So, I mean, that's a slightly technical how I do that. So here is this big diagram. I can say a few words about this. I mean, in this audience, there are some experts, so maybe it's not unuseful. So here is what we would like to understand. This is what we would like to understand, right? This is the upward flow from this particular Higgs bundle, which we know, actually, you can see from this diagram too, that this is very stable. Which we know is very stable, and we would like to understand this morphism. Again, both of them are vector spaces. This direction is non-trivial on each of them, complicated or not complicated, but we understand it completely, but non-trivial C direction. And how do you compute it? So this was the strategy we started to do with Nigel, to use our understanding of these upward flows, how they relate to Heckert transformation. So we have this space of Heckert correspondences, which I call HK, over the Hitchin section. So we don't do the complete Heckert correspondence, we just restrict everything to the Hitchin section, and we will take Higgs bundles EA on the Hitchin section, and we will take, we notice that the underlying vector bundle is always the same E0, which we then identify, and at the point C, we will pick a K-dimensional subspace in that fiber of the vector spin bundle, and we will do Heckert transformation on that. But we also have a Higgs field, So we actually want also the Higgs field to be compatible with the subspace. And this turns out to be a nice construction, this Hecker correspondence space, a nice closed subset of the Hitchin base or W0 and the Hitchin section times the Grassmannian. And because the Grassmannian is proper, you can actually see that this map down is proper, and that will show by the next phrase I will say, will show that this one actually was also proper. Because the next statement is, and that's what we proved with Nigel, that every Higgs bundle here arises precisely from it, one Higgs bundle here and one subspace invariant by phi here by a Hecker transformation. So I can get to each and every one of the Higgs bundle by a unique Hecker transformation from the Hitchin section. That was our work there. And this way it will show us that this is proper. So it's a very stable one. And then it puts us into a situation which we will be able to soon understand completely. So one observation is that in this case, everything happens only at the point C. So if I take those bases in the Hitchin map, which vanish at the point C, that will be a subvector space. You can act on this by translation, and then it will be equivariant, this map, with respect to that. So with respect to this large dimensional subspace, everything is equivariant. So if you be quotient out by this, then we will suddenly arrive to a situation which is completely living in the Lie algebra, and at that point C. Namely, if you restrict to this point, then we will just get a point in the Grassmannian, and this will be turn out to be nothing in the base, but the constant section, right? Because if I restrict you remember the Higgs fields which were in our WA that had this last column. And then when we restrict to the point, we will get the constant section, precisely the companion matrix of something in the Lie algebra in the base. And above the base, we will have the subspaces in the Grassmannian k-dimensional subspaces, which the corresponding Lie algebra element will fix. And that turns out to be a study, well studied, not this particular one really well studied, but the general or the Borel version of this. You can take this Grothendieck resolution, in this case, the partial Grothendieck resolution, which exactly is a point, a pair of Lie algebra elements, and then subspaces in the Lagrangian fixed by the Lie algebra element. That's exactly the Grothendieck resolution. And here the constant section is pulled up there, and this will be a nice finite map, but now between finite dimensional varieties first, and soon both will turn out to be vector spaces. Anyway, so you do this diagram must be familiar to anyone who had looked at the Grothendieck resolution in the case of the Borel subgroup. In fact, this part of the diagram I learned from Jiveyun in the case of the flag variety, and this is just a slight generalization of that to this partial flag variety situation. But basically his argument help us do. I mean, you have to work a little bit on this map, slightly more involved than, but it's the same ideas go into this map. And what you will get is that this map turns out to be the same as this map between these two vector spaces, which by now are our good friends. It turns out that the map we get here is precisely the map on equivariant, the spectrum of the equivariant cohomology of the Grassmannian of K-planes in Cn. So that's really what I wanted to report on, this observation. So I just finished by saying that in this way, this upward flow on this particular very stable Higgs bundle, the map on it modulo this trivial action of this big vector space. There is this trivial factor, which doesn't, this is an isomorphism, the Hitchin map there. But outside that, you actually just have this map on the equivariant, the spectrum of equivariant cohomology of the Grassmannian. So that's what I hope to show you, this weird occurrence of the spectrum of equivariant cohomology inside the Hitchin map. that it exactly works. And this way, we recover something with Nigel. We had many other ways to prove that the multiplicity algebra of this particular Hitchin map is precisely the cohomology ring of the Grassmannian. But we had other more explicit ways to do that. And one more way, and this is how I'm going to finish with raising some question. My main question is why is this equivalent cohomology there? What does it mean? And then one answer I have, which I am very excited about, and we are working on this with a PhD student of mine. We managed to do this for SL2. Anyway, we can generalize the situation of a partial flag variety. Partial flag variety is special. It has a G action, so that the regular nilpotent element acts with a single fixed point. It's truly remarkable. There is a corresponding vector field with a single zero. And that geometry, now I expect to help in the general case when we have what I call a G-regular action of a G on a smooth projective variety, where you have a single fixed point or zero of the vector field generated by a unipotent element. In that case, you can cook out a natural zero subscheme, a fixed point scheme inside your variety over the constant section, and the ring of functions on the constant section is precisely the cohomology, equivalent cohomology ring of G. So that's our base. And the conjecture is that in this situation, which is quite restrictive, you can always realize this fixed point scheme, which is precisely the fixed point scheme showing up in the Grassmannian case for the Hitchin map, but it's always the equivariant cohomology. And excitingly, it was actually this week that I managed, I think, to completely pin down this for SL2. And it looks very promising to be true in general. That would just show that the appearance of equivariant cohomology as fixed point scheme is not so surprising. I must say that it was some similar appearances were in the work of Brion and Carell. His set of papers were the ones which led me to all this consideration, Carell's papers. And yes, and also there is related work in Goreski-McPherson. And of course, you know this much more than 3D mirror symmetry. I also have the spectrum of equivalent conjugates appearing, but in different situations. And finally, I wanted to raise this problem, which was the original motivation to consider all of this, namely mirror symmetry. In our work with Nigel, we expected, or basically we deduced it from the Kapustin-Witten story, their approach that the mirror of this particular upward flows should just be the case exterior part of the universal bundle at the point C. And then one check on this is that the push forward of the structure sheaf of the upward flow should match the vector bundle on the Hitchin section, on the mirror Hitchin section. And then this was what we were discussing, right? This push forward of the structure sheet. But what we discovered in terms of equivariant cohomology, that this is actually a sheaf of algebras. There is multiplicative structure, equivariant cohomology ring on this side. And it would be awesome to understand if there is anything on the other side of mirror symmetry. Is there a natural structure of sheaf of algebras for the universal Higgs bundle on the mirror side? So that's it. That concludes my talk.
All right. Thanks. Do people have questions?
Can I ask a stupid question? Maybe you said it, but I mean, so suppose you start with a very stable bundle, not with very stable Higgs bundle. Then if you consider zero Higgs field, that gives you a very stable Higgs bundle. And then the question is, what is this multiplicity algebra in that case?
It's a very good question. So this was our other endeavor. So one direction we have been working on, basically in our paper, we discussed basically only these two cases. We cannot really say anything in the other types. This type 1-1, which I talked about today, and the traditional example that you mentioning. And with Nigel, and that's actually mostly Nigel's push, he is computing genus 2 case, rank 2. He managed to compute all the multiplicity algebras of the kind you mentioned, the type two, as I call it, so the usual ones. And there it still looks like the very stable ones anyway, they still look like cohomology rings. But then the excitement happens in genus three, where he doesn't yet have a complete classification, but he has some examples where we found some very stable examples where it's no longer going to be integral. We found a family, three-dimensional family of multiplicity algebras, which are non-isomorph. I mean, they are distinct by the base, and therefore it is not integral, and so it cannot be equivariant cohomology. But you still have something which looks like the equivariant cohomology ring of something, except that it's not integral. So I don't know what that means.
So what you're describing, this happens even in the case when it starts with a very stable bundle and in zero Higgs field.
Yeah, if you take a very stable bundle, you can ask the same question. What is its multiplicity algebra? Or more generally, like here, you can try to understand this map. But my point is that in all that, so Nigel has a classification for genus two and a large set of examples for genus three, and we start to see examples which are no longer going to be cohomology rings of spaces. The algebras are not integral. They are still Poincaré duality algebras, as they should be, graded Poincaré duality algebras. These maps still look like the spectrum of some sort of equivariant cohomology. But again, that's the excitement there. It is going to be, and this is only genus 3 SL2. So I expect to be, you know, I don't know what we will see, what kind of things we will see. But it's very complicated in that side. And right. But on the other hand, on the top, where I talked, here I just mentioned some examples, but here we have a complete classification. And in each of the cases, we will find the Hitchin map on the upward flow of type 1-1, very stable upward flow, is always the spectrum of equivariant cohomology of products of Grassmannian.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought that if you start with a very stable bundle and zero Higgs field, then for all of these, I thought for all of these, this algebras would be isomorphic. That's not the case.
No, that's the amazing thing. They in not just not isomorphic, they will come in families and continuously going to change. We found an example like that in genus three. So it's going to be what I hope. There could be differential geometry structure on them, some sort of connection, something, how they change. We can try to measure that. That's an awful lot of extra things. And as I say, we only looked at up to genus 3 SL2, nothing above this, because it's you really need a very explicit. So what you had seen, right, we have to understand this map somehow explicitly in some sense. You have to find coordinates here, coordinates there, and you have to understand the Hitchin map algebraically. And this is surprisingly non-trivial. And up there, we could use Hecke transformations to completely understand the map, but down here we have no starting point really. We cannot start, and yeah. But of course, you as you know, these things have to do with D modules. So maybe in relationship to D modules, those structures can be used to holonomy D modules. So maybe we can find the multiplicity algebra via that the original construction in geometric Lagrange.
I had to unmute. Richard, did you have a question?
Oh, yes, I did. I was wondering whether or not you were able to package all of this this information in terms of spec of, you know, the equivariant cohomology of these various Grassmannians into something about the G of O equivariant Borel Mohr homology of the affine Grassmannian. Just because if you do that, then you're looking at like the universal Higgs. The universal Hitchin map from sort of the group scheme of regular centralizers to the Hitchin to T mod W.
Right. So we are looking at the affine Grassmannian. This map, what you discussed, sounds very nice. I don't think I have thought about that, but we had looked at other type 1-1 upward flows, which are not very stable. Mm-hmm. And we try to compute their multiplicity algebras. And then now instead of the usual Grassmannian, you can do Hecke transformations, but more complicated Hecke transformations, which are labeled by the spherical cells in the affine Grassmannian. But now they are no longer, well, if they are either non-projective or non-smooth if you close them down. And so much more complicated geometry. What we found in one case, for example, we found this map. You take this map and you take the jet scheme of this map. And don't ask me what it is. We computed in some wobbly examples using the geometry of affine Grassmannian that this map is just the, you take the jet scheme of both, and that's the map between them. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the jet scheme of equivariant cohomology is. But there, again, you have explicit algebraic maps. This is a particular kind of wobbly upward flows. But what you say sounds very nice. So if you somehow can study this in a family, it would be potentially very interesting.
Thanks.
All right, were there any other questions? All right, then let's thank Tamás again.
Thank you.